I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we're on the second part of step 12, and I'm going to turn the meeting over to David.
Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name's David. Grateful to be here and grateful to be sober tonight. It's nice to see everybody. We haven't worked out the acoustics on this room, but we're going to try to keep our voices up. There are plenty of seats closer to us as well. So we would invite you to adjust accordingly. So we started this meeting, basically it's a big book step study, as Judy pointed out. We're going to share our experience, strength, and hope on some select paragraphs on the second half of step 12 tonight. We always like to point out that we're not experts on the big book. We're not here to teach anybody anything. We're basically here to share experience, strength, and hope as it was laid out for us on this path of recovery in the hopes that it'll be helpful to somebody else. So we've been through the 12 steps halfway through. We noticed that we're doing step 12 in two parts tonight. So it talks about carrying the message to alcoholics and practicing the principles in all our affairs. It's interesting, the book kind of lays it out that way too. The second half of step 12, a lot of the paragraphs we'll get to tonight deal with practicing these principles in all our affairs. Although we're still going to finish up on working with others. So we're going to start on page 96, around the middle of the page. Suppose you are now making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume. He says he is prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult somebody else. So when I initially read that, I always think about my own tendency to get kind of possessive of newcomers and kind of my own getting sort of insulted if somebody fires me and goes and hires another sponsor. And of course, when I'm on that end of it, I don't struggle with that as much. I just fire them and go get somebody else because it's all about me and I want to feel better, so I will do what it takes. It's always interesting to me when we read this too that on the second visit to the man, somehow we expect him to have read this book and he's prepared to go through with the 12 steps. That kind of flies in the face of what seems to be sort of normal these days, where we meet and read a paragraph at a time, word for word, line by line, and so forth. That seems to be a sort of a popular experience. I personally was never sponsored that way, and I have no axe to grind with it. I just don't have experience with that method. But the line that glows to me is, having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. And the sponsor that I work with today, if he said it to me once, he said it to me 1,000 times. David, all you have to offer is your experience, strength, and hope. If anybody wants your advice, they'll ask for it. And I'm still waiting. Occasionally, somebody does call up and say, hey, I want to get your input on something. It's like the angels sing, you know? It's like, woohoo! Well, I'm sure I'll have something to say about it. Even if I don't know the answer, I'll bring one. So, you know, but this model of our experience, strength, and hope, this is it. This is what we have. This is what we can bring. This is what saves us when we get here. You know, when I got here, nobody told me, here's what you have to do, David. Here's what you have to do. And you go home and do this. That's not actually true. And I didn't get sober this time, but I did have an experience with my first sponsor. And I'll just tell this really quickly. I was doing AA the way I do everything. I was doing it my way. I would come in. I was kind of investigating AA. I spent a lot of time stopping drinking. You know, it was a good idea for me to quit drinking a long time before I quit drinking. And so I consulted my favorite human power, me, and me said, just stop drinking and everything will be fine. So I would stop, and I would stop for 30 days. I would stop. I'd stop for almost a year one time on my own, white knuckle sobriety. And if you've ever had that experience, then you know if you're an alcoholic without a drink and without a solution, that's a pretty hairy, uncomfortable sort of an experience. I really, if you don't know why you drank, if you're one of those people still pondering, why do I drink? Just stop drinking for a little while. I promise you, you'll figure it out, you know? It's like, oh, I really want to get drunk, you know? But I really don't want to get drunk, you know? So I would come to AA, and it was an 8 o'clock meeting. I would come at 7:59 or 8:02, something. I'd slide in the back door, I'd sit in the back, and I would listen, and my plan was to hear something, you know? And hopefully I could leave with a little more information than I came with. I wouldn't tell you that, but I just figured I could come in here and kind of steal or con recovery. Maybe I could learn something that I could use. And I made a terrible mistake. I showed up early at an AA meeting. I don't recommend that. It was an 8:30 meeting, and I thought it was an 8 o'clock meeting, so I rolled in at about 8:08, and there's like four guys there. And they're happy. And they seem competent. They seem like they know what they're doing. They're talking about their families and they're talking about sports and stuff. And I'm trying to be cool in a room of now five people. I'm trying to like be anonymous. It's hard to do that, you know? So I just went and just kind of, you know, nodded. Yeah, hello, there's the table. And I went and I just sat down, you know? And I just sat there. And you know that uncomfortable feeling, like you feel like you're going to burst into flames at any moment, you know? And I just sat there, just on the verge of combustion, you know? And this guy, Mark, he was a corpsman in the Navy, and he just came up and he sat down across from me. He's like, what's your story, man? I was like, well, I used to drink, but I don't anymore. So that's the deal. He's like, well, the way this thing works, man, is you get a sponsor, you get a home group, you make a commitment to staying sober one day at a time. If you want to do that, I'll help you. If you don't want to do that, don't waste my time. Will you be my sponsor? Yeah, I'll be your sponsor. But I want you to call me every day at 5:30. You're going to go to the meetings I go to. You're going to meet me there. You willing to do that?
Yeah, okay, I'm willing.
Okay, good. And so I did. I started calling him every day at 5:30. And the first time that I did that, I called him, and I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to say. It was one of those deals where you dial and the dial time and you hang up and practice. You know what you're gonna. Hello. You know, hi. I called him up, and I was so like lost. I was honest. I was so out of my own element. I just had to be honest. So I was just like, I don't know what to say to you, man. I'm calling you. You told me to call you. I don't know what to say. Well, how are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. You know, boss is a jerk.
Well, you might want to think about being grateful for having a job. A lot of people don't have work.
I was like, yeah, okay.
You going to a meeting tonight?
Yeah, I'm going to a meeting.
Anybody tell you they love you today?
No.
Well, I love you.
Thank you.
So that was my introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I ran with those guys for about 90 days, and I did what they said to do, and then I felt like going back to doing it my way. But in that 90 days, they did show me AA. They showed me what it was like to go early to meetings. They showed me what it was like to stay late and clean up. They told me, go over there and talk to that new guy. He looks like he's about to spontaneously combust. And I was like, oh, I don't want to do that. Good. We know you don't want to do that. Go do it anyway. So I'll go walk over and stand next to the guy. Hey. But that was my beginning. Judy?
Okay. So I think it's very succinctly put that we're not here to solve somebody's marriage problems, finance problems. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him a much practical advice, and that's the application of the steps. Let him know you're available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. So that's really a light touch. They're really telling us this is a light touch. You're not imposing anything on anybody, and nobody really did that with me either. I would have liked it more if they had been a little bit more insistent, and they just weren't. So we have a lot of paragraphs, so I'm just going to add that and let you move on.
Okay. So we're going to pick up on page 98. It's not a matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give that often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence upon God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well, regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. So in my sponsorship family, I've shared this before, but we refer to all the material needs as the money and the honey, sex and checks. There's other ways we describe it. I'll skip them. But nobody has ever called me at 3 o'clock in the morning sober that didn't want to talk about finance or romance. So it tells us very clearly that I can get well regardless of anyone, job or no job, wife or no wife. The only condition is that I trust God and clean house. And we're reading about step 12 tonight. But that simple sentence there, the way my sponsor put it to me, was that that trust in God and cleaning house is to practice the first 11 steps. That's it. We do the first 11 steps. And how do we know we've done the first 11 steps? We're starting to have a spiritual awakening, and we become sort of motivated to help other people. So trust God, clean house, do the first 11 steps. That's everything I know about that.
Okay. So that tells us succinctly what our message is. Trust God and clean house. That's the only message that we have. So if it's not enough, or if it needs to be somehow tweaked in order to be palatable to you, we don't have accommodation for that. So the more focused we are on the message and clear about what it is we know and what we don't know, the more effective God can be through us. With people in recovery. So this is very important. I don't know how many times I have answered the phone, you know, on the AA line, you know, when I've taken phone watch. And I always, when they give me the call, I always ask the person who's given me the call, why is the person calling? And I've gotten some, you know, silence on the other end of the phone about that. But I want to know who I'm talking to and why I'm talking to them. Because if they're calling for a taxi ride or help me figure out what to do with my husband, I don't have an answer for that. And so when I get on the phone with people, I'm very clear about what are you calling for? What is it you're needing from us? And I'm clear about what it is we can do for them. And usually the conversation is short at 2 in the morning. Okay?
So we'll pick up on page 98. Now the domestic problem. There may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. When your prospect has made such reparation as he can to his family and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is now living, he should proceed to put these principles into action at home. That is, if he's lucky enough to have a home. Though his family be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. They can then be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness. So again, there's another touchstone of the attitude that I'm to bring, one of helpfulness and friendliness. I always get a little bit miffed at the way this paragraph starts off. It just assumes that I have a domestic problem. It doesn't say if you have a domestic problem. Now the domestic problem. There, apparently the best we can hope for is divorce, separation, or just strained relations. Oh, man, you know, we could do an hour on strained relations, I'm sure. So it's basically what I get from here is he's talking about, he's already given me the credit for having made such reparation as I can with my family. I've already gone through the steps with my family. And now I'm attempting to practice these principles at home. I should ignore you and concentrate on my own spiritual demonstration. Demonstration would be an action word, not a theoretical sort of a thing. I'm one of those people. I get seduced by the idea that if I understand something, that's good enough, you know? So I'm always seeking to understand. I want to read. I want to know more. I want to put it in a little box in my mind that makes sense. And what I've come to realize is that all of that is an effort to basically excuse me from doing anything. I don't want to actually do the dishes or actually repair the screen or actually show up and say something nice to you. I just want to understand that that's the right thing to do and get in line with the intention to do it. So I always fall short on the demonstration. And then argument and fault finding are like the top two things on my resume. I mean, I love an argument. I will argue with you if I agree with you, just because I love to argue. You know, I mean, you know, because I can argue both sides. It's just fun, you know, to fight and win. And I won't stop until a victory is mine. And fault finding, that's the other thing that I seem to be cursed with, is this laser sharp insight into what you're doing wrong. And it's a curse, you know. I mean, it's just, I got to walk around with it. I can see it plainly. And I delude myself often into thinking that I really should tell you. It would be the loving thing that he'd want to know. And, you know, and it tells me I should avoid my two favorite things to do, like the plague. And now I'm starting to get the idea that I really need God's help, because I really can't do these things on my own. On my own, I will win the argument. On my own, I will bait you into one. I will be right, and I will point out your flaws as I perceive them. I always forget that that's the filter that I run everything through. It's my perception. Whoever rubber stamped that as a reasonable perception in the first place, you know? I did. So it tells me if I persist for a few months, the most incompatible people will find a basis on which they can meet. And little by little, this is going to take time. My first sponsor used to say, it didn't get broke overnight. It ain't going to get fixed overnight. Try not to get too well by Thursday, David. So little by little, I surrendered, you know. And what I have found in my life today is that when I am concentrated on my own spiritual demonstration, when I am concentrated on my own inventory, when I'm dialed in with my own sponsor, when I'm talking to other men in AA every day about the trouble that I'm having with honesty or
integrity or just plain old keeping my mouth shut. You know, like most of the people that I'm familiar with, I can just call them. We have a shorthand. I can just call up and go, it's her again. You know, and they're like, yeah, I know. What are you doing? You know, what are you bringing? And we can refocus once again on what my actions are. I have noticed that if I show up in front of her and I say, hey, listen, I was impatient with you today. I had a personal ambition. I was really looking to get the following things done in the next, I was trying to do an hour's worth of work in 45 minutes. So your phone call to say hello was annoying to me. I apologize. I'm sorry. It was my fault. And it's just my thinking about me and my own ambitions and my own agenda. And I couldn't set that aside for you. And it hurt your feelings. And I'll try to do better. If I can continue to do that, rather than what the hell are you doing calling me at 4:45? You know, I'm trying to finish up the work day. You know, that's my default mode, right? So if I can bring that over and over, little by little, I notice that every once in a while, she'll throw something my way. Like, hey, I was being selfish about this, or I was thinking about myself. I didn't consider you, you know? But God, don't expect it. You know, if you expect it, you're done. I'm just talking about myself.
So there's this little spot here where it says principles into action at home. It doesn't say I get to express my feelings and tell you how you hurt my feelings, which is something that I would rather do. So a principle requires self-sacrifice. If I'm going to live by a principle, I can't have an agenda. I can't have a goal. I have to live by a principle, by honesty, by kindness, by tolerance. Love and tolerance of others is our code. My sponsor says that to me a lot. She reminds me of that phrase in the book. And love and tolerance of others doesn't mean I pretend like I like you until I can't stand it anymore and then rip your face off. It means that I have got to surrender myself to God so that that God can be present and work through me. And I'd like to tell you that this is, you know, it happens like this, you know, just say a prayer and it's God on demand. You know, I had a sponsor that used to say to me, it's not God on demand, because I'd call her and say, well, I prayed about it. You know, I didn't get any answer.
Where's my check?
No, that's right. And she'd say two things to me. She'd say, it's not God on demand, and we're not living a carrot by carrot and stick, you know. You don't get a carrot. That's not the way this goes. This is about living a life of self-sacrifice. Could you ever meet a group of people that were so ill-equipped for this? Oh, my goodness. So, and in the argument and fact, fault-finding are to be avoided like the plague. Gosh, what a great language. I also have to be careful that that I'm not finding fault and arguing with myself about what I'm doing, because that is the epitome of self-centeredness. So while I'm busy doing that, you know, my sponsor used to say to me, she'd just do this with me. Talking to yourself again. Sponsoring yourself, talking to yourself. And as long as you keep doing that, you're going to stay right in there. You're going to go nowhere. So, oh my God. I can remember when I was early, well, I wasn't early in sobriety. I'd been sober a while. And I had this job that I thought I was way too overqualified for. But I was a lunatic mentally. And I called her when I'm working in this place pretty much by myself. I'm in it's a wood, these guys did cabinets, and they're all in the back, you know, making cabinets. I'm in the front answering the phone, right? I'm by myself. And I called my sponsor and I said, you know, I really think I need a different job. And she said, you do? Yeah, I really think that I need more to do, and this is beneath me. I'm much smarter than this. And she said to me,
Okay, so is this the same person that keeps calling me like every 2 hours because your mind's driving you crazy? Well, yeah. Well, so how are you going to be okay with more people around you? How is that going to work? You can't manage by yourself. You can't function by yourself. You were going to put you in the middle of a couple of people, there's going to be a tragedy. Okay, so let's see if we can work on your brain and it not torturing you through the day. And then you going home and spreading all that torture around. And that's exactly what I did. In the step book, it talks about being a depressive and taking that, the description they use is taking it and depositing it in wherever you work or depositing it at home. I never knew. I always thought it was my right to go home and bitch about my day. I thought that's why I had a husband. Isn't it? Is he supposed to be listening to me? it never occurred to me that the kind and loving thing to do would be to leave that somewhere else and come home and be available to him. Never occurred to me. And it was a foreign concept as a sober person. And I did it poorly. Hence, there is nobody at home now. But at any rate, this is hard learned and very difficult practice. So I'll just leave it at that. Oh, and the persisted in little by little and an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness. Real difficult to muster, especially when I have a plan and I have a time frame. Those are my two things. Time frame and a plan. And if you're getting in the way of that, I really have to pray hard or I'm probably going to take your knees off. Okay. That's all I have to say about that. Mm.
I just stumbled on when you were sharing, I was just thinking about I had embarked, somebody told me to do this, I didn't come up with it, but every day showing up in front of my spouse and saying, is there anything I can do to be helpful to you today? And I persisted in that. And little by little, I noticed, I noticed that I felt better. And I noticed that sometimes she had some very definite ideas about what I could do to be helpful to her. I just asked. And she had it in mind, and I would go about doing it. And I thought it was great, and I would brag to people about it and tell other people about it. And then we were arguing one time and she said, that whole, can I be helpful to you thing today? It just leaves me cold. I think you're just parroting something your sponsor said. I was like, well, it wasn't, but then I stopped doing it. I just quit. So I try to walk it off. I try to have that attitude, but I did stop asking the question. So it just occurred to me at this table, I can probably revive that practice.
Well, here's another bubble thought for you. Please.
Excuse us.
Please. Please don't go home to your spouse and say, well, my sponsor says I'm supposed to do this. Or my sponsor says, if this isn't your idea and you're not in agreement with what your sponsor says, please don't put your sponsor between you and your spouse. That is real bad, a bad message, because that's not why we're here being sponsors. We're here to be in the background. I have my sponsors in the background. I'm not throwing my sponsor in the, like the gauntlet, down on the ground. Say again?
Under the bus.
And then you're throwing Alcoholics Anonymous under the bus as well. And this is the message and this is what we carry and the image that we project to people about what AA is. And it's very damaging to Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's not carrying the message. You're not carrying the message doing that. So if you can't stand up on your own two feet and stand behind what you're saying and what you're doing, then you shouldn't be doing it. That's all. I just wanted to say that.
So we're going to pick up on page 100. And Patrick's home group, they read this at the end of every meeting. I love this paragraph. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. I love changing my present. There's only two things alcoholics don't like, you know. That's change and the way things are. I'm up for changing my present circumstances so I can complain about that. But, you know, I love the image of both you and the new man walk day by day in a path of spiritual progress. It's a, you know, it just the image is brotherhood on a level playing field walking this path, you know. My sponsor used to say God doesn't have grandkids, you know. My mother is my sister, and my sons are my brothers, and my sponsees are my brothers, and my sponsor is my brother. We're all on the same path here. And again, he uses that word persist. You know, day by day, persist. Keep doing this thing, David. I want desperately, you know, I need to hear stuff like that because I really want to stay sober on what I did yesterday. You know, I worked really hard last week on my recovery. Can I watch TV tonight? You know, I really do. I want to just take the year off. So, you know, that's, if you leave it up to me, I will take the year off. Well, that's part of my story. I did take a year off. And then another. So looking back, when we place ourselves in God's hands, and I think today, I think about the family that I participate in, the business that I participate in, the house where I live, the city where I live, the car that I drive, all those things, when I look back on them, I didn't really get them, you know? They showed up in front of me. They showed up, you know, some of them just dropped in my lap while I was busy doing what you guys do around here, you know? Just making the coffee, just showing up, just meeting somebody at the meeting, just, you know, walking it off. You know, showing up at work, trying to do what I say I'm going to do, keep my promises to the best of my ability, just walking it off one day at a time. And God, you know, it's just not my habit to be grateful for that stuff. I expect it, you know. I want to check the box and move on to the next thing that David wants, you know. But there, if I look at it in this light, and so much of this stuff, as these things have been... there's been times in my life where the home has been threatened to be taken away from me, the marriage, the children, the business, all of that has been threatened since I so-called possessed it, you know? And what you guys have taught me to do in every one of those situations on an ongoing basis, and Judy's fond of saying this, and I hear it in my head all the time, is this constant surrender, just giving this to the Father. This is not my house. I like to think of it as my house. This is my Father's house. You know, I get to be the custodian of these sticks and bricks. These are not even my children, you know, but I get to raise them, you know. And if I can practice, Father, these are your kids. Show me, give me the power, teach me, show me, guide me, use me. Help me to raise these children. Help me to participate in this marriage. Help me to show up on this job. If you want me to have this job, this marriage, if you want me to parent these children. So I will accept what is in my life today as his will, and ask for the power to be a custodian, really, to take an active role in caretaking those things. Because clearly, those things need action. They need demonstration. And clearly, left to my own devices, I will use them up and destroy them, you know, because that's what I do with stuff. So that isn't what I meant to say, but... it is a new and wonderful world because, you know, because on my best days, you know, all of this is a gift. None of it is mine, you know, and I get to come here and do this, and I get to be with you, and I get to know you, and I get to be your brother, you know, and I get to be your friend. Those are good days, you know, when I understand that that's a gift. Those are, in fact, my present circumstances. Judy?
So what comes to us when we put ourselves in God's hands? You know, when you're new in sobriety, you say, what if I don't want, how many times have I heard this and I said it myself? What if I don't want what God wants? No. Raise your hands. How many people have thought that, right? Y'all are chicken out there.
You're definitely an alcoholic.
What if I don't want what God wants?
But I don't want what God wants.
Because, and I had that attitude and had that thought because of this. And this is something a circuit speaker said when I was early in sobriety, and I thought, oh my gosh, that hits the nail on the head. He said, you have to get over the idea that God is in the bushes with a flamethrower waiting for you. Because I thought that's who God was. You know, he's just up there or somewhere or standing next to me with the checklist of all the things I've done wrong, just waiting for me to make the right misstep, and then bam, you know, I'm going to get what I deserve. So, you know, when you have that kind of perception, and if you're at this point in the steps, hopefully you don't, but, you know, you shouldn't actually, but I bring that to the ground tonight because it's easy to flip out of that, you know, flip into that kind of thinking. Get immersed in my will and what I think I want and what I think should happen, and then I start not believing in God. I start not believing that God either is or he isn't. That and then the disbelief takes over. And the biggest crime there is to suffer from disbelief, because it's the block. You know, they talk in the book about being shut off from the sunlight of the Spirit. And what does that? Resentment, rage, anger, gluttony, lust, all these things that we, you know, we have seven of them, but they manifest in all kinds of costumes and show up in our lives in different costumes at different times, and we have to be on the lookout for them. So given that that's the case, I have to walk day by day, shoulder to shoulder with the new guy, with the old guy, with everybody that's here. Because if I at any point think that I don't have to do that, I am going to be in some serious trouble, because then I'm going to be back to talking to myself. That's always where I'm going to go. There's only two choices. You're either out here with us or you're in here with you. And there's nowhere else to go. So when you're out here with us, you have a connection to God. Doesn't matter who you think God is or what you believe about God. There is one. And my experience is that everything that's happened to me, the absolutely worst things that have happened to me, so my perception said, were the absolutely most important things to make me turn into the person that I am today. So now I'm not afraid of these, you know, crises in my life. If something goes seemingly wrong, it may sting a little, but I'm not devastated by it. Because my experience has been that as I walk this path and continue to walk this path, God pulls me, and he's had to pull me because I'm not going voluntarily, okay? He's had to create circumstances in my life to make me move, because I'm like a mule. I'm going to stay where I am until I absolutely can't stand there anymore. And he knows who I am, so he works with me that way. And so he moves me forward that way. And that's what's made me surrender. That's why I talk about that so much, because it is my experience and continues to be. So what came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands? Well, the thing about that is, I never had any idea what that could possibly be. So now what happens? Now fear kicks in. Now I'm afraid. Oh, what if it's not something that I want? How could, you know, I have to ask myself this question. If God is a loving God, whatever God you happen to believe in, if God is a loving God and all-powerful and ever-present, why would he do something that wasn't for my best and my good? How does that, doesn't add up? So how do you go from a person who is questioning whether it's going to be okay and I'm going to like it to a person who's absolutely embraces it? And what happens is, as I've worked the steps and done what has been required of me, my heart has changed so that the desires of my heart are different. It isn't that I didn't have to make a decision about some circumstantial thing that I would accept or reject. My insides change. My desires have changed, my perspective changes, and that's what God does with us. So if we walk hand in hand with each other, we have a connection to that power. That power only exists in these rooms with each other through the power of working the steps. And if we're not involved in all those tentacles of what goes on here, then the recovery can't happen. Okay. And the power to carry it out, that was the last thing I wanted to say. So when you have these things in front of you, you know, the love and tolerance of others is our code, and we want to persist in what we're doing, and all these things that are so foreign to all of us. That's where that prayer, you know, the power to carry out his will, only his will. That's it. Stop praying. You know, the book says it over and over. I did it forever. I'm praying for this. I'm praying for that. Oh, make this happen. Oh, get me some money. Oh, whatever I'm praying for. And I've just stopped that. And I just asked for whatever your will is. Your will be done, not mine. Because if you really think about it, my will and my decision making got me the seat I have here. Why would I trust me? It just doesn't add up. When you do it logically, it doesn't add up, you know? And I don't care how long I've been here, I still can't. I can't trust me because I'm by nature deceitful, you know, cunning, baffling, and powerful in my own right. And I can't trust that. I have got to turn myself over to a power greater, AA, and the God of my understanding. Thanks.
I love what one of our friends shares, that her sponsor sent her to go look in the mirror and said, now when you look at your own reflection in the mirror, just know that that's the only person we know for sure has tried to kill you.
Absolutely. Amen to that.
So we're going to continue on page 100, assuming we are spiritually fit. We can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. People have said we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures which show drinking scenes. We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go to their houses. We mustn't think or be reminded about alcohol at all. Our experience shows this is not necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There is something the matter with his spiritual status. His only chance for sobriety would be some place like the Greenland ice cap, and even there an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. Ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on the theory that he would escape the alcohol problem. Well, I was talking about this very thing with a friend today. I don't know if we're going to talk more about this. Yeah, I think in the beginning when I read this, I was like, "Woohoo! It's cool for me to go to a bar," and because I wanted to do what I'd always done. What were we talking about today? We were talking about this idea. Like there's a lot of things that we hear in the room that make logical sense, and to my mind, just because they make logical sense doesn't mean they're necessarily true or beneficial or in accordance with what we actually read in the book. Like it's very popular when I go to the jail once a month on the 8th floor, and it's very common knowledge up there that when they get out, they know not to avoid people, places, and things. They say that all the time. Just, I've got to avoid people, places, and things. And now I get that if you're trying to get sober, it's probably not a good idea to go get high center on a bar stool to pass the next couple hours. That makes intuitive sense. But the book doesn't talk about any of that stuff, you know? And really, if you think about it,
you know, my life is either unmanageable by me or it's not. I'm either completely powerless over alcohol or I'm pretending something else is going on, you know? So it really is my experience that when I am spiritually fit, when I am doing these things, I can go anywhere, I can do anything, you know? And including get drunk, because because we know what we're really motivated to do, you know? I know if I'm going to a bar to really accidentally get drunk. I know that, you know? I might tell you something different. You know, I got a business thing going on there. But I know what I'm doing. So we meet these conditions every day, you know. And the thing is, I'm not cocky or afraid of alcohol. It there's beer in the refrigerator at my house. I think there's a third of a jug of wine in there from my mother-in-law. And I can't really tell you how many of are in there, and I can't tell you the last time I looked at it. It doesn't call to me. It doesn't, when I open it up, the condensation running down the side of the glass doesn't make me go, oh. Because it doesn't look like relief to me anymore. You know, it's just alcohol, and I would no more take a drink of alcohol today in this state of mind that I am in tonight. I'm not saying I'm not going to be drunk as a monkey tomorrow. I might well be, but I haven't been for the last 23 years, so I'm looking good, I think, for the rest of the day. I think, but the restoration to sanity is that I would no more pick up a bottle of beer and drink it than I would handle a cobra snake. You know, people can do that. People can handle cobra snakes. They can do the little flutey thing and make them dance and everything like that. I'm not jealous. Oh, I wish I could do that. Look at him throwing that snake over his head like that. God, that'd be nice. Maybe if I just grabbed it by the tail, you know? Maybe if I just handled snakes on the weekends, you know? I mean, that stuff is just absent. And all I want to say about that is I didn't will it to be absent, you know? I just noticed that it's absent. You know, somewhere down the road of walking this path and doing these things, somewhere along the way I look and I go, wow, I'm indifferent to alcohol. That's weird. I've never been indifferent to alcohol. Alcohol's important. You know, you're getting the beer. How much? How much are you going to get? When are you going to get it? And are you going to get it before 12? Because, you know, they're going to put the chains on the coolers. You know? I used to, at some point in the party, I would decide there wasn't going to be enough, so I would start, my little famous act was I would take beer and I would put it in the oven. Because nobody looks in the oven. I know where to go at 3 o'clock in the morning, to the oven. Yeah, I don't know where this came from, you know. Trouble is, you have a tendency to forget. And then maybe somebody you live with has to preheat the oven. Shit starts popping everywhere. You got to come up with something quick. I don't have any. Must have been Mark. Judy?
I don't know if I can follow that. Okay.
You never did that? I'm the only one. Great.
Spiritual fitness. I can't determine my spiritual fitness under self-counsel, so I'll just say that. No matter how long I'm sober or how good an inventory I do or how many times a week I talk to my sponsor, if I'm trying to determine my spiritual fitness for something, I need to be talking to my sponsor about that. So I'll just say that. And then, you know, sanity will have returned. We talk about that a lot. And It is a wonderful, you know, when we were talking about the paragraph just ahead before about the things that came to us that God gave us. This is what God gave me, this total freedom from alcohol. I don't think about it. It can be around me. I can be around it. It's just totally not even an issue in my head. I am totally free of that bondage.
That, to me, is a most amazing thing, because I was not like that when I got here, I can tell you that. It was on my mind all the time, for a good bit of the time when I first came to AA. So the fact that I can function like this and not have a thought about it, and I can be amongst the the people of the world and have them talk about drinking, and it doesn't, I don't feel like I'm out of place, I don't feel like I don't belong. It just got removed. And if that's the gift, the only gift I get, that's great. And that really is all we promise. That's all Alcoholics Anonymous promises, that you can be restored to sanity and not be tortured like that. And whatever else happens, you know, it's just life. But that is a clear gift of a power greater, and it's available to anybody.
All right, we have got on page 102, why sit with a long face in places where there's drinking, sighing about the good old days? If it's a happy occasion, try to increase the pleasure of those there. If it's a business occasion, go and attend to your business enthusiastically. If you're with a person who wants to eat in a bar, by all means, go along. Let your friends know they're not to change their habits on your account. At a proper time and place, explain to all your friends why alcohol disagrees with you. If you do this thoroughly, few people will ask you to drink. While you were drinking, you were withdrawing from life little by little. Now you're getting back into the social life of this world. Don't start to withdraw again just because your friends drink liquor. Your job now is to be at a place where you can be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives, and God will keep you unharmed. Yeah, so that's what we've been talking about. We've been repurposed here to be of maximum helpfulness and usefulness to others. So wherever we're running out of time, but wherever I go, if I'm turning the key in my home, the front door of my home, if I'm walking in this room or the Friday Nooners or an AA meeting anywhere, or a customer office or my job or whatever. When I walk through that door, if my attitude is to be of service, to be helpful, and a lot of times that's a spiritual exercise for me, just turning the key, remembering when I'm turning the key, say a little prayer, God, help me to be of service to these people just for today. Help me, give me the strength to be of service. If I go to an AA meeting with that motive, it's usually a fantastic meeting, you know? If I go to a meeting with another motive, like to hear something worth hearing. Did I say that? I did. Sorry. Some other motive. I'm often disappointed. I'm often frustrated. I'm often, you know, it was a bad meeting. Did you hear what she said? You know, I mean, but when my motive is to be there to be of service, I tend to notice that there's service opportunities everywhere. You can walk, anytime you walk in with this many people, you will see people who need a kind word. If you look for them, you will see people who are about to spontaneously combust. You will see people who are uncomfortable, you know? So, or even if you don't see that, you can greet people warmly, you know? If that's my motive, I generally enjoy the meeting, and I seem to be of usefulness to other people. When I go into my home expecting it to be a train wreck, you know, and I walk in resenting that, I act accordingly. When I turn the key and I ask to be of love and service, and I walk in, hey, look, it's a train wreck. Isn't this awesome? I get to help. You know what I mean? It's the same damn thing going on in there, but I get to be different if I practice these things. Thanks.
Okay. So let's go ahead and read 103, because that's a pretty interesting.
So after all, the very last paragraph with squiggly writing says, after all, our problems were of our own making. Bottles were only a symptom Besides, we have stopped fighting anyone or anything. We have to! Exclamation point. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so cease fighting anything and anybody. This is the surrender that has to be approached on a daily basis, sometime minute by minute. If my gift here that God gives me, this thing that I didn't know what I was going to get, and I didn't understand that it was whether it was going to be whether something that I would like or not. You know, I've sanity's returned and I've been repurposed. What else do you want? What else is there? You know, anybody walking on the street would just give their right arm for a little sanity in their life, and to have a purpose that they could lay their head on the pillow at night and believe that it was worthwhile that they got up and walked the earth and breathed that day. And I tell you what, going to work doesn't so much do that for me, but coming here really does it for me. It really, really does. I have to be with you. I love you people. I don't always like you, but I do love all of you. And and I really have to be with you. And I absolutely thought, you've got to be kidding me. I can't stand these people. I don't want to talk to them. I don't want to touch them. And I wish they'd stop touching me. I mean, that was what I came with. And it's not what I'm leaving with. So cease fighting. So those three things. Your return to sanity. That's what ceasing fighting anything and anybody is. That's a return to sanity. You stop fighting. So when you stop fighting, you'll know sanity has returned. And you've been repurposed. So now your heart's been changed. You do things that you didn't ever imagine you would even want to do. And they're now your passion. And that it all comes about because you were desperate enough to tell somebody who you are, why you're doing what you're doing, and let them help you walk through and meet a God of your understanding. And then let that God recreate you from the ground up. And that's really the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what we're carrying here. And if we're carrying anything else, we're not being true to our message. So we're going to end there. So the seventh tradition of Alcoholics Anonymous says that we're to be self-supporting through our own contributions.
Wow.
Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting. I just said that. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, which is to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Announcements, are there any related and AA-related announcements anybody would like to make tonight? Yes, sir.
Alcoholic David, this supper and a speaker next week, everybody needs to know about this. It's this meeting. It's going to be in the Northminster House where we originally started the meeting. It's just on the other side of the parking lot. Won't be hard to find. But I don't think it says that on the flyer. The church is going to be closed Easter Monday, so we're going to make do over in the Northminster House, which is a lovely facility. You'll really like it. But we're going to have a potluck, bring a dish if you wish, 6 p.m. So we'll have food and fellowship for an hour. And then Christy E. is coming down from Richmond. She's going to tell her story, supper and a speaker, next Monday, Northminster House. And there's flyers on the table. Please, everyone, take them out of here. They're not going to do any good in our coffee supplies box this week. So leave with a bunch. Take them back to your home groups. Help us invite people. Al-Anons, Alitots, Alateens, all are welcome. Just regular old folks. Bring a dish if you wish. Thanks.
Okay. Any other announcements? All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands. Newcomers. Is there anybody in their first 30 days of sobriety that would like to introduce yourself to us? Hey, Darren. Welcome.
Welcome.
My name is Kevin. I'm an alcoholic.
Kevin, welcome.
Welcome.
Anybody else?
Can you come back?
Okay.
All right, we have a literature table here. We have the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is important. If you don't have one, come see me and we'll get you one. There are meeting lists. There is the Harmony, which is the Tidewater Intergroup newsletter, and the flyers that David referred to. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, don't delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. Please see one of these people if you need a sponsor. Thank you so much for everybody that came tonight and for the participation. After we clean up, everybody's invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the second part of the 12th step that we discussed tonight. And everybody's welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting at Bella Pizza.
Bella Pizza.
All right. And who would like to read the last two paragraphs on page 164 before we close the meeting up?
Go.
Go.
Hi, I'm Mary Jo, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Mary
Jo. Mary Jo.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you than to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you could do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you. Until then.
Amen. So anybody wants to join us to say the Lord's Prayer?
Just for today.
I'm going to bridge this gap here. Oh, look at that. Stretch out. Wow, stretch out. I have another one here.
That's a problem.
He felt like I did.
All right. All right, Miss Jill, lead us out of here.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
Amen.
Works good.
Yeah.